You're listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on bingemedia.net. And now, movie homework.
Welcome to Movie Homework on bingemedia.net. I'm your host, Alex Insira, and I'm here, as always, with the group that rounds out Movie Homework, at least for this run, Mr. Jack Valley.
Yo, yo, yo.
And Mr. Chatsy, what's going on, sir?
Hey, buddy. No theme music for me.
I think we got this one. Hold on.
Oh, you know what? I got something.
Oh, God.
There you go. Perfect. I like it.
There we go. Just wrap that
All right.
Gentlemen, we are rounding out again the end of this series of Movie Homework. Directorial debuts that are exciting. And we're ending on my pick, which is Paul Thomas Anderson's Heart 8. 1996,
huge movie.
This is one that, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson, one of my favorite directors, but just never got the will, never got the oomph to sit down and to check this out, and finally did, and here we are to talk about it. So that's my history with Heart 8. Gentlemen, Chad, why don't you go first? What's your backstory like with Heart 8?
I had seen this a couple times. It's been years, though. This is one of those definite of the PTA films that I have not seen a ton. He's, like you, one of my favorite directors. Of course, we've talked about There Will Be Blood thousands of times on this network between us three. This was a good rewatch because it had been... I mean, I remember watching his YouTube short, Cigarettes and Coffee, that this was based on as well. I think that's still on YouTube. I'd seen it a couple times, but it had been a few years. So, yeah, that's my history.
Is Philip Baker Hall in that too?
Yeah, he is. Yes.
Nice. How much of that made it to the final product?
It's a 23-minute movie, I believe, but it's just all set in a diner. Our boy Jack, Miguel Ferrer, old Abe from Twin Peaks is in that. We've got Marvin Nash, the guy, the cop from Reservoir Dogs as well. He's like the other main dude in it. It's just a diner, mainly set in the diner between a couple. There's a couple that's like talking, and then Sydney and this kind of loner as well. So he took elements from that plays into it. But there's a hitman in it. Just the bones maybe of it, but... Yeah, expanded, obviously, with this movie.
Nice. How about you, Jack?
I've seen it a couple times, but it's been a while. I mean, I think back in the day, I actually, when I was looking through the trivia for this movie, it kind of reminded me, it was tough to find this movie, because at one point, it said in the trivia around 2005, so that was around, like, you know, for me, it was sophomore or junior year of high school. Like, that DVD was going for $100 online. So I remember it was a bitch to find in the first place. But I remember watching it, liking it, not loving it, but noticing, and you know, kind of like Bottle Rocket, it's that director's first movie. And I sort of moved on from it quickly just because, okay, that was good, but, like, he does all those things in Boogie Nights and Magnolia way better, you know? So... Never really kind of gave this enough credit on its own terms, I don't think. So I was glad to revisit it.
Nice. All right. Well, let's get down to the details. As we know, directed, written by Paul Thomas Anderson. And cinematographer Robert Elswit, who'd go on to work with PTA for a number of movies, win the Academy Award for cinematography of There Will Be Blood. Score by John Bryan and Michael Penn. And fucking asshole. And starring Philip Baker Hall, John C. Reilly, Goop Paltrow, Sam Jackson, and a fantastically mulleted Philip Seymour Hoffman in just one minor scene.
Shaka-laka do, baby.
date of release, January 1996. Was released in Sundance and then released in the U.S. February 28th, 1997. Budget $3 million, and it grossed $222,000. Seems like there was a lot at play in terms of a lot of arguments between the production company and PTA as far as the distribution goes. So yeah, for sure. Obviously didn't make a lot on that return, but you know, made a lot on the subsequent returns. All right, let's get down to our first act. Outside a diner in Nevada, Sydney finds a young man sitting on the ground next to the entrance. Sensing that the young man is troubled and in need of help, Sydney offers the man a cigarette and a cup of coffee. Once inside, the young man, John, tells Sydney that he needs $6,000 in order to pay for his mother's funeral. Sydney offers the young man a trip to Vegas and to teach him how to gamble and survive. After threatening Sydney with three forms of karate if the old man tries anything with him, John agrees to the offer. Once in Vegas, Sydney has the young man clean up and explains to him his system for getting hotel/casino comps at Garrett Collins Casino, which John follows dutifully and becomes successful. 2 years later in Reno, Nevada, John has become Sydney's full-on protege, using Sydney's methods to make a somewhat comfortable life for himself. John, who's already not working with a full deck, becomes friendly with Jimmy and introduces him to Sydney. Jimmy tells a story about watching Sydney play craps and betting the hard eight and not hitting, which makes Sydney a bit uncomfortable. A casino waitress named Clementine endears herself to Sydney, and after hearing her story that includes low-key prostitution, the old gambler plays matchmaker with the less-than-bright server and his naive protege, John. And I want to get your guys' thoughts on this first act. Going to play a little clip for this first act right now. Here we go.
It's a room.
At this point, Sydney has invited Clementine up to his room. He wants to get to know her. They have some kind of, you know, back and forth. He's a regular at the casino. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they go out to, you know, get some coffee. He invites her back. He sees that she's in, you know, probably not the best situation, just invites her up for, you know, have a fucking nice place to stay for a night at least.
Stuff for you.
Captain?
Yeah?
Do you want to fuck me?
Do you think that?
Oh, you brought me here.
Do you think that?
I don't know.
Well, you should know before you ask a question like that.
Well, it seems like you're being nice to me, and...
So, you'd think that I would want that?
Well, if you wanted to fuck me, then...
Stop saying that.
It just seemed like...
Well, don't let it seem that way. This is a comfortable bed for you. I want you to sleep on it. To give you something to... A place to have a nice shower. A bed.
Don't get angry.
No, I'm not. Because I understand how you could ask a question like that.
Now you really look at me as a piece of shit.
No.
All right.
John won't be back until very late. He won't disturb you.
This is John's room?
Not tonight.
So a little bit of a long clip, but I think it shows both of their characters. Shows that Sydney is, you know, he's got an open heart. He feels something for this kid. And she, I don't know about you guys, but I really got like Jodie Foster, De Niro vibes from Taxi Driver. When he brings her back to his house and she's like, oh, let's do this. And he's like, no, fuck that. Fuck all that. You know, like this isn't a life for you. What do you think, Chad? What do you think about this first act?
I can definitely see that. No. comparison there. I was on board again. I mean, like, I had forgotten a lot about this movie. I mean, Philip Baker Hall to me is always fucking Lieutenant Bookman from Seinfeld. Like, that's what he is embedded in my brain as always. But this is such a good fucking character study just of him, like this whole, even the whole movie, but mm-hmm. like just everything, every scene he's in is just complete stealing the show, for me, at least for him. I'm not a big Gwyneth Paltrow fan. She's fine here though. I mean, I don't think she's the like distracting or anything, but yeah, just the naivety that John C. Reilly portrays throughout this movie is pretty great, which obviously this leads to Reilly and Philip Baker Hall and Philip Seymour Hoffman everybody working with P.T. Anderson later in all of his movies. obviously why, because they do really well with the material here, and yeah, I'm on board with this first half quite a bit.
Yeah, Clementine could have been anybody, I feel like. I mean, yeah. Paltrow's not really bringing much to it. I mean, no. She's kind of a name, especially during that time. So I'm sure that would, you know, was there to kind of help PTA kind of market it, see how that went. But yeah. It was kind of... So two things. I think it plays much better on rewatch when you know the reason why Sydney's, you know, reaching out to John. Mm-hmm. And the way he acts, the way he does. Yeah. And two, you know, PTA is going to go on to have like an expansive cast of characters that all each have their own storyline and they all interweave at some point. So it was kind of refreshing to have just a couple of characters to focus on solely. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this first act, Jack? I almost said John, and I realized that's your real name.
Okay, that's a little much. Johnny but, Cakes.
Johnny Cakes.
Okay. Yeah. So first act, I mean, it's all about Philip Baker Hall. I think you gotta really like to love him as an actor. If you don't, then this falls apart pretty quickly because, like you said, this plays better on repeat viewings. It's a long time in this movie before you find out what's going on with him, you know? I can see where certain people might try and hit the tap out button because what this guy is doing doesn't seem reasonable in the first act, you know? Like, if you don't buy him as just a genuine person, I can see that being a tough hill for people to get over, you know? But, I mean, there's a lot that I really like about the first act. You know, his performance, I like the fact that John C. Reilly threatens him with karate because I'm pretty sure, you know, all the karate scenes in Boogie Nights, that just tells me that John C. Reilly really wanted to riff on karate.
Definitely. You know?
Like, got to do it in two movies. You know, the Gwyneth Paltrow thing is what it is. But one thing that you can tell right from the start is PTA is exceptionally good at shooting a movie. Like, right out the gate, everything about all the scenes in the casino, it looks like Casino. It looks like Scorsese, you know?
Absolutely.
He is incredible in terms of his cinematography and his blocking. Everything's lit well. Everything looks good. I don't know, you know, this was an AMG copy that was acquired, but the copy that I watched, this movie looks like it was shot yesterday.
Agreed.
Like,
yeah, totally.
Yeah. Incredible. And I think that's all credit to the cinematography and the direction there. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was one scene in particular right after Sydney meets Jimmy and he sort of walks through the casino. And it's the first time I noticed there was a long take in the movie. And it's not like a ton happens. It just sort of follows him, you know, camera's behind him walking through the casino. At one point, the camera sort of turns around a craps table and he appears from the left and sort of like walks in the frame and the camera continues to follow them. And it's just one of those things where it's like, it's a very simple scene. This is a very simple story so far, directed exceptionally well.
Yeah.
I was really taken by that this time. Even the opening scene, like when, Sydney's walking up to that diner, sees John, and I don't know, you could just tell that there's somebody who knows what they're doing behind the camera right off the hop.
That shot really reminded me of Goodfellas too.
Oh, yes.
Outside the diner, there's a truck going by.
Yep. And then that's another thing, too. So what was this, 96, 97?
96, yeah.
So there were things about this movie that reminded me of the other, you know, 90s auteur filmmakers. Like, how can you see those scenes in the diner and not immediately think of Pulp Fiction, you know?
Yeah.
like there were like little references to some of his contemporaries, I felt. I gotta tell you, watching the first act, I immediately felt like I have done this movie a disservice for a long time, because this movie is much better than I remember.
Yeah. So yeah, very, very similar. Yeah. I mean, PTA has such a way too about like shooting thing, like even the close up shots of like the tokens when they're exchanging that, like just right. giving something so minute, like such meaning. It's like it works so well. Like it's just ridiculous. This guy was what, 24, 25 when he was making this movie too, and right. he understands. It's just it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it's almost immersive. Like you feel immersed in the scene, like when you have the like those close up shots.
Yeah. Yep.
There's a shot in the third act. We'll get there, but it's probably one of my favorite shots. It's when Jimmy and Sydney are in the car. And just the way PTA like chooses to shoot each one of those guys, they're looking right at the camera. It makes you feel like you're right there.
Chad, you mentioned the chips and that whole scheme, right? At the beginning of the movie. That scheme, this movie reminded me of this. My buddy and I, back in the day, thought, hey, why don't we buy bulk lots of DVDs on eBay and sell them individually at top dollar? So I think we got the idea, the general idea for like taking $20 to make it into 100 from this movie. Like as soon as I saw that, it immediately reminded me. I'm like, oh, that's where we started talking about doing that. So yeah, I mean, we never carried through with it, but I just remember thinking like, oh, we could be millionaires by buying 100 DVDs and selling them individually. Fucking morons.
Well, this. Well, I guess technically reading through the notes, the first act kind of with that when is the Philip Seymour Hoffman, is that in the notes later?
I didn't put that in because I mean it's such a small scene. I just wanted to give a shit.
Yeah, but he's just so like just the most cringeworthy character at, like you can be in this movie, just like the worst guy ever, and he's just so fucking, I don't know, it's just the magnitude of his performance always, and just even the smallest role, is just flabbergasting to me always. So sad. And I think it even elevates it too that, you know, obviously he's dead. Mm-hmm. Just seeing him in these movies, just like, yep, he's just the best.
He's the best
actor in everything he's in.
Yeah. It's almost like that character like eventually hit big at the casino and then went on to fucking open a mattress store and Punch-Drunk Love. Yeah. Like they seem like the same character, just douchebag characters.
Yeah, well, there's even the like the way he says "fuck" there at the end, like you know, he's just fucked everyone over. Just like just being in like casinos before and just seeing just the heartbreak from people at the craps table. It's like, oh, he just captures it so well.
He's also the reason why I don't play table blackjack or play craps.
Yeah, shakalakadoo over. Can get that out of my mind.
All right, good Act stuff. Two. Here we go. John and Clementine spend the night and more time together becoming inseparable. One night, Sydney receives a panic phone call asking for help and arrives at a motel room to find a nervous John, Clementine sitting on the floor with her head in her hands and a bloody unconscious body handcuffed to the bed. John explains that he took a hostage for money, and after some questioning, Sydney finds out that Clementine had brought the man back for sex, but the guy refused to pay. John mentions that he and Clementine got married on a whim and planned for Clementine to sell herself for extra money. They contacted the man's wife in an effort to get the money they're owed and desperately called Sydney when they were left with no outs. After calming everyone down, Sydney convinces the pair to leave town on a honeymoon. The trio leave the motel. John gathers their belongings and Sydney advises the newlyweds to go to Niagara Falls. They have a heartfelt goodbye and peace out, leaving Sydney to clean up their mess. Later on, back in his room, Sydney watches a high-res Blu-ray of John and Clementine's nuptials. So this second
really nice quality.
That's one of the, yeah, I don't, one of Jack's Blu-rays that he sold made it to fucking Nevada. Yeah. So this second clip is basically Sydney kind of taking control of the situation, at the motel room. And, just to go back to the character of Sydney and what Philip Baker Hall brings to it. By this point, you're like, all right, what the big question with this entire movie is, why does this fucking guy care? Like, why is he helping John out so much? Why does he care for this guy so much? But obviously we know by the end of the movie, but here's that second clip.
Now you are going to answer every question I ask you. Don't look at John. Look at me.
Now, when you left the hotel this morning, where did you go?
We went shopping at the mall.
After that?
We went to my house.
Why?
Because I wanted to get some clothes.
I told you to buy clothes.
I wanted to go get something.
All right.
After that. So just ask me.
We had sex.
Then, yes, what?
Look, I know you're trying to figure this whole thing out, okay? But what happened this morning doesn't matter.
I'll judge that.
Fine, then just ask me what happened.
Okay, I would like to understand how you go from being in the bar at the sand dunes with that guy to being in here. Where did this thing go wrong?
Because he thought that he was smart and I was stupid, and I'm not stupid.
Well, this is a pretty stupid situation, isn't it?
Well, we'll see how fucking stupid I am when I get my money, won't we?
You know the first thing they should have taught you at hooker school? You get the money up front.
Fuck you.
Sid, don't talk to her like that.
Hey, John, I'm having a conversation with Clementine.
Yeah, well, don't talk to her like that.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I'm warning you, Sid. Don't fucking talk to her like that. She's my wife.
So that's the big reveal for Sydney, that they actually got married, which kind of turns everything on its head. I think Sydney feels more of a impulse to help these kids out at this point.
Yeah.
Act two, Jack, where are we at? How do you feel?
Yeah, again, it's this movie is all on the strength of Philip Baker Hall. It's just, it's a character study. You have to buy into him. Even this late into the story, you still don't have an answer as to why he's doing this. I find him incredibly charismatic. Like, there's something about him. You don't know what his backstory is or what his angle is, right? I mean, you know, I had even forgotten the details of you know, where this movie goes. So this time through, I was finding myself like, God, what is this guy's deal? Like, I remember he's got some connection to John C. Reilly, but like, what is it, you know? But you see these scenes, you know, Chad, you mentioned the Philip Seymour Hoffman scene where he's betting and he's very calm. He's not really showing a ton of emotion. He, you know, when John calls Sydney, Sydney is in bed on top of the covers. It looks like he collapsed onto the bed in a full suit and shoes and everything. Like, something is going on with this guy, you know? And I think his performance gives me enough to stick around to find out, like, what's happening here? You know, it's like, it's such a strong character. And I think one of the strengths of this story, too, is that I don't think that all of these characters are, like, I don't think there's anybody that's really fully redeemable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody here is a good person, really. Like maybe you could argue John is misguided. And that's eventually what Sydney's thinking, right? And that's like, okay, so he feels a responsibility to that. But ultimately, like, who's a good guy in this movie? I don't know if there is one.
Yeah.
But I mean, that being said, I still think it's like, it's really interesting. I didn't find, you know, give it the Pete MC litmus test here. There wasn't a single moment where I was even thinking about what was on my phone. I just, like I'm just being honest. Like, I was into this in a way that I haven't been in a while. And it's, I think it's just that this movie is such a small story and it's just so, there's like no fat on this.
No, story. Not at all.
Yep. Like, you can make an argument that every single moment kind of has to be there, you know? And the little things, too. Again, talking about PTA, like, Sydney goes to John's rented motel room, and he holds on John and Sydney for a long time as Sydney reacts to what he's seeing in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know there's a guy on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know that Clementine's in the room. It is all Philip Baker Hall. And it's just, I think he's really impressive in this, and nothing in Act Two makes me feel any differently about that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, two things. Sydney, like, you wonder about his character, like, what his, like, background. Like, you know, he's a gambler. You know, he's some kind of hustler, but he's older. He seems like a sad individual, but you don't know if he's like, I mean, at this point, when he shows up to the motel and sees everything, like, is he a fixer? Is he the Winston Wolfe character? You know, right. That kind of made me think of, You know, that scene where he wakes up and he's in a full suit on the bed? Like, that seemed very Winston Wolf to me. You know, like, the motherfucker's just ready to go. And the other thing is that, yeah, there's not a lot of likable characters, but they're not, I don't know if he, outside of maybe Jimmy, like, are any of them really hateable, though? Like, I don't think we know enough about the things that they've done. Maybe just Jimmy and Sydney to just be completely unredeemable, you know?
Right.
What do you think, Chad?
I think the big old saucer bags underneath Philip Baker Hall's eyes also, his sad eyes play a really like big part in this movie too, because he's so like, yeah, like Jack was saying, like if you're not on board with him, then you're going to fucking hate this movie, but I can't see how you're not going to be on board with this guy. He's like, as Jack said, very charismatic, and I mean, he sells everything he's in, and the rewatch, of course, is huge with this movie because... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even rewatching it, I watched it a few weeks ago when we were planning on doing it, and you know, we got pushed and everything. But then rewatching it again this week is just like, I liked it so much more the second time, just being so fresh with it, and like, yeah, him selling everything is just so much better. Yeah, even Samuel L. Jackson though, like his character, like he still respects this character so much that he's trying to impress him in a way, like. Mm-hmm. Like he's trying to be like, you're an old timer, I respect you, but yeah, man, I it's kind of upsetting to me too that we don't like this original character of Sydney. Like this is what like the power of movies essentially, you know, creating a random new character that we can get on board with, and he's fucking amazing in this movie. I love Philip Baker Hall in this, so yeah.
I would say that Sydney has seen, by the time that Jimmy shows up, Sydney has seen maybe 30 Jimmys in his entire life. You know what I mean? Like he just knows that guy. So when Jimmy comes up to him, they start talking, and he, you know, Jimmy gets offended. He's like, "No, I work inside the casino. I don't fucking park cars and shit." You know. Mm-hmm. And then you see that really, really hit home later on. He's like, "I could smell your fucking, you know, condescension. Basically, like you're talking down to me, but like I'm fucking, you know, I'm real deal at the casino."
Yeah, well, even going back to the first act when John's like introducing Sydney to Jimmy, he's like trying to impress him, like, look at this, I got this like guy with clout or whatever, and he just instantly dismisses him, like, yeah, I don't like him. He's like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. But I didn't, another thing I caught too is that, you know, how Gwyneth Paltrow's character is always talking about, he idolizes you, looks up to you so much. I didn't even notice the first like rewatch of this how he has the exact same car as him, even like as they're driving off at the end.
Yeah, there, I didn't notice that, yeah.
Pretty fantastic, same car.
You know, the other thing that as we're talking about this is sort of occurring to me is how strong of a theme family is for Paul Thomas Anderson, especially through God, up through The Master, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, Boogie Nights is obviously the biggest example of this, I would say. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, PTA clearly has like very complicated feelings around his relationship with his parents. Like that,
yeah, I think he has big daddy issues.
Yeah, like that's a huge through line in this, Magnolia. You know, obviously There Will Be Blood. I mean, fuck, that's got to be one of the most brutal father-son stories of all time.
I mean, the Tom Cruise character in Magnolia, and I forget who plays his dad in that.
Jason Robards.
Yeah, Jason Robards is, I believe PTA has said that it's somewhat semi-autobiographical.
Yeah, yeah.
So that makes it's irony.
It's always interesting to hear stuff like that because, you know, we always talk about QT, but QT says that his most personal film in terms of his relationship with his father is Kill Bill.
Yeah.
Like he says that all the time. And it's like, what the fuck does that mean? Crazy.
Well, the irony, didn't P.T. Anderson's dad buy him his first like camera for making movies and shit too? Which is pretty...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty fantastic.
Great dad. Okay, act three. Sydney receives a note in his hotel room at Garrett Collins Casino and meets Jimmy, the author of the note, in his car. They talk about the hostage situation gone wrong, and Sydney guesses correctly that Jimmy's the one that gave John the gun. Jimmy brings up Niagara Falls, leading Sydney to guess correctly that Jimmy has heard from John and Clementine. Jimmy disregards the fact and tells Sydney the reason why he really wrote the note to meet Jimmy. Jimmy's heard about the Atlantic City stories of Sydney's past, and that he knows that Sydney shot John's father in the face years ago. Jimmy then blackmails Sidney to not tell John the old man is his father's murderer for 10 grand. Sidney tries to weasel his way out of it, saying he doesn't have the 10 grand, but after some hardcore threatening, Sidney relents by saying he only has 6 grand. Jimmy drives Sidney to his suite over at Gary Collins' casino, and the old gambler gives Jimmy the cash. Later, John calls Sidney to get an update on the botched hostage situation and to give an update on their road trip to Niagara Falls. Sidney tells John that he loves him like a son, which brings the young man to tears. John thanks him, tells him he loves him too, and they both hang up. Confident that he now knows that John doesn't know the truth, Sidney stalks and breaks into Jimmy's house and waits for the man to come home. At Garrett Collins' casino, Jimmy bets $2,000 on a hard 8 and hits it. Feeling lucky, Jimmy picks up a hooker and makes it home. As he's about to get busy, Sidney shoots Jimmy multiple times, killing him instantly. Sidney tells the hooker to get gone. Sidney takes the fat stacks from Jimmy's pocket and leaves. The film ends with shots of John and Clementine happy on their road trip and a stoic Sidney drinking coffee at the diner from the start of the film. He notices blood on the cuff of his shirt as he ashes a cigarette and covers it with his jacket sleeve. Fade to black. And so ends Hard 8, PTA's debut. Chad, how's this end for you? Does it land?
It lands. It does land. Just, I mean, the history of Sidney in general, like, we don't know what this guy's been through. Clearly, he's got an estranged relationship with his fucking kids. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, yeah, he's willing to say, I love you. And, like, just even the 2 years that he knows him, that we, this relationship between those two, that he's, like, going all out. It just, yeah, it works. It works really well. And he's just willing to do whatever for these people. He's like, even if you call me and tell me, I'm going to give you all the money I have. You hear me? All the money I have. It's like, guy's just so nice. Like, why does he love these people so much? What shit did he do in the rest of his life that makes him this generous at this point? But No, man, it definitely sticks in landing for me. I liked this even way more this rewatch in the last few weeks.
Nice.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
There is something to be said about Sidney and his character, that he feels like he has to take out Jimmy and, like, a really violent fat. He doesn't just shoot him in the head. Like, he shoots him like 7 times.
Yeah. Like, in the dick.
Yeah. And that's not a guy that, you know, who has done this only once before or twice before. Mm-hmm. Like, he's done this a few times before.
Yeah. And then even you never see him in a really fragile state, but when Jimmy's pointing that gun at him in the car, that's like the first time he's been so cool and calm the rest of this movie. And then you can see the fear in his eyes at that point. He's like, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. But is that him just playing with him? Or is that, you know, I don't know. It's a good performance all around. I got nothing bad to say about it. So,
what about you, Jack?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I know this is a tough movie to talk about because the story is so simple, and it really, and I said it the last two times, but it's just the strength of the performance. Like, that's it. Like, the only way I could sell this movie to somebody is, do you like Philip Baker Hall? Have you seen him in anything? Do you want to see him in probably his best role? That's it. You know, like, there's nothing else to it. If you like this guy as an actor, you want to see what I think is his best work, this is it. Like, this, everything else is set dressing for it's a showcase for his performance. Nice. As far as the conclusion, where things go, I love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's a great ending. It makes sense for the character. And again, like you said, like the violence of how he kills Jimmy. I mean, earlier in the movie, when he sees Clementine and John in the motel room, you know, the guy on the bed, he slams him in the face with the butt of his gun, like, a couple of times, just as a definitive, like, okay, I'm doing this. Now I'm involved. Like, fuck you.
Nope.
And the conviction of his choices is so interesting. Getting that reveal of his past and John's past and why he's doing what he's doing and the way that changes your perception of the rest of the film is really cool. It's a really cool storytelling technique for PTA. You know, the other thing that I really love about this movie is when you said, you know, a lot of PTA movies are a really diverse cast of characters with a lot going on, right? And this is very pared down and focused. After watching this again, I really think that when PTA makes a movie, he actually gives all of his characters this level of depth. We just see the pieces of their life that are important to the moment. For instance, right? One of my favorite side plots in Boogie Nights is Don Cheadle.
Yes.
Throughout the movie, Don Cheadle is having this identity crisis, right? And you hear him at one of the pool parties at the beginning of the movie. The camera is panning through the kitchen, and it's him and Luis Guzman. And Don Cheadle's standing there, and Luis Guzman's just like, look, man, it's like I've been saying, where would you dig? Where would you dig? And Don Cheadle's like, this is what I've been saying. Next party that you see is a New Year's Eve party. It's Don Cheadle sitting at a piano by himself, wearing this like white studded jacket and fucking like crystal dreadlocks
at the
piano. But like, I don't know. I feel like when PTA goes in on a movie, he brings this level of detail to everybody. And like his he just has like the trust to set up all these characters and then sort of just, it feels like he just sees what happens with his ensemble films, you know?
Maybe it's part of that whole like 90s cast, but I feel like Tarantino, Wes Anderson, like they both, all three of these guys, like come from that very similar like character study background. Mm-hmm. Because I've heard from many like actors and actresses in different interviews that like if they just have a question about somebody's backstory, just to, you know, really hone in on either motivation or whatever, like they're able to just like fucking lay it all out.
Yeah.
And it's not just like, hey, well, you know, whatever it fucking, whatever makes you get that motivation, make up whatever you want. It's like, no, they have it. It's just that like true auteur style, you know?
Well, it's how a novelist approaches a story, right?
Absolutely.
Like, in a lot of cases, I mean, they build a world and they have to, because they just, they've got the text and they got to, you know, flesh it out in someone's mind. I was shockingly impressed with this movie. And Alex, I said this to you a couple weeks ago when we were talking about that other show series that we're doing, and you had said, oh, why don't we do Hard Eight? And I said, you know, I haven't seen it in a while. I don't know if I have much to say about it. I'm glad that we ended up doing this for movie homework, because I was just really impressed. I was really impressed with this movie.
Nice.
Overall.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here, man. Same here. All right, that's it for the breakdown of Hard Eight. Let's move on to the main themes. Jack, you mentioned earlier, family is always a big theme for PTA in his films. That's absolutely true. I don't have it down here, but high stake, risk taking lifestyles don't always pay off. Acceptance. So, you know, Sidney's kind of accepted what he's done in that he has to, you know, reach out to John, try to make it right as far as that goes. Yeah. You know, John accepts that Clementine, as much as he likes her, you know, does, you know, some tricks on the side for what, you know, for extra money or whatever. That age old movie homework theme, redemption, how fun. So while there's not totally unredeemable characters, you know, I think the impetus for this whole, movie's arc is that Sidney is looking for redemption for shooting John's father.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Common compliments, the writing, performances, particularly Philip Baker Hall, and an impressive directorial debut for Anderson. Can't disagree with any of those. Complaints, not a lot of complaints, but a couple of things that I did see were that it was boring, that it was slow, that it was a poor noir interpretation, and that there are no likable characters. And we talked about that last point, Jack, that there's no likable characters in this. But, you know, they're not completely despicable characters. They're still living in that shade of gray, you know?
I think they are. You know, likable is a weird way to put it, because I think they are likable. I just think that they're not morally good. Uh-huh. I think that's the distinction for me.
They live in the moral gray.
Yeah, like, no, like I said, you know, Sidney slamming the guy in the face with the revolver, like, he's not devoid of Sidney. I mean, obviously, but, you know, throughout the film, you don't know what he did. Mm-hmm. At that moment, it's really like, oh, that's a little much. I didn't expect him to do that, you know.
Yeah. But all right, moving on to some quivia. The original title for this was Sidney. Since it was his first film and he had basically no control over it, much less the final cut, like he's had on his other features, Reicher Entertainment recut the film and retitled it Hard Eight. This enraged Anderson, and through many talks and deals, he convinced the studio to let him release his cut, but with a new title, Hard Eight. Anderson later said this experience taught him that doing your best to make the best possible movie was only half the job when being a director. The other half was dealing with all the egos involved. The Sydney's a much better fucking title for this. I like that, I know it's the 90s, they're trying to have some kind of flashy name, more marketable name, so I get that, but Sydney just sums up the entire movie for me.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And in terms of, you know, half the job is making a great movie as great as possible, and the other half is just dealing with egos. I figure, you know, when you get to the level of after you make Boogie Nights, then you're just like, I hire people to fucking handle all that shit. I'm just gonna focus on the movie and just deal with that and not deal with all the like behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, well, even like PTA was on Marc Maron a few years ago and he talked about this movie quite a bit, like just how he had like a 2.5 hour cut of it originally, and then
of course
like,
he did.
I think this movie works so well too because it's so simplistic and it's just like hour and 40 or whatever it is, and it just moves really quick. I don't know if 2.5 hour were like movie would work for me as well, but
agreed.
Maybe not.
I think if the movie was longer, it would be testing my patience more in terms of that reveal.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine that you, in a 2.5 hour movie, you would have to push that reveal further down, I would think. But then also, like, what else could possibly be in there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a movie that I mentioned, like, it seems like the fat has been trimmed completely from it. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what you would embellish, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, if this is a 2.5 hour movie, yeah, it would test your patience. But then I don't want to see an hour and a half of cut of Boogie Nights either.
Right.
You know?
Very true. Yep.
All right. So Philip Seymour Hoffman improvised his crap scene because of course he did. That's fucking amazing.
Fucking man.
When Jimmy and Sydney have their confrontation, Jimmy mentions that he knows Sydney's friends, Floyd Gondoli and Jimmy Gator, in Paul Thomas Anderson's the next movie, Boogie Nights. Philip Baker Hall plays Floyd Gondoli. In Anderson's follow-up to Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Philip Baker Hall plays Jimmy Gator. Boom.
Nice.
PTA Extended Universe.
Extended Universe. Beautiful. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was just thinking, so the Jimmy Gator thing made me think of Magnolia. So Magnolia is generally considered to be like his like most self-indulgent movie, right? Like I like it. We know people have argued about it on this site before, but generally speaking, a lot of people, their problem with it is that it's just too damn long, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like too much going on. It's kind of interesting that it almost feels like this movie, it's that Boogie Nights is that sweet spot between these two movies, where Boogie Nights, I feel like it's a long movie, but it has a lot of worthwhile characters and a lot of interesting shit going on. Magnolia, I like Magnolia a lot, but I do agree sometimes. And I'm just thinking to the point where, like, you know, Jimmy Gator, he tells his daughter, he's like, yes, I have cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, it's a big moment, but it's all in a movie full of like so many characters with so many big moments. That seems like such a throwaway thing to like tell your daughter briefly, and you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm kind of remembering just how fucking expansive Magnolia is as a movie.
Well, when that comes up, I mean, she just kind of gets like struck. She's kind of like frozen, and then you don't realize why until the end of the movie. So almost kind of like a reverse thing.
Right.
Well,
right.
It's kind of like the same thing, but reverse for Philip Baker Hall's characters in both of those movies.
Right. But I don't know. It's just interesting.
Reminds me, I want to see a side story about Quiz Kid Donnie Smith so bad. I want to fucking spin off of that. Him and his fucking braces.
Man, rough.
Sydney is also the name of the Philip Baker Hall character in Midnight Run.
Oh, okay.
Which I didn't know, and then I was like, oh my god, of course it is, because it's a very classic line that Dennis Farina says. And Philip Baker Hall in that plays a guy in Vegas who has like underworld connections.
Mm.
Dennis Farina says something about like bearing a telephone in his head. It's very classic. The original shooting script included a different ending for the film, where the audience discovers that Jimmy had betrayed Sidney and given his name and John's and Clementine's to the man who was being held hostage in the motel. The man tracks down Sidney outside the same highway coffee shop where he met John and shoots him 3 times, killing him. It's not known whether this scene was ever actually filmed.
Hmm. Interesting. I don't know how I'd feel about that.
I don't know how I'd feel about it either, but it's not... You know, reading that the first time, I was like, that seems... That also seems like a natural conclusion. That doesn't seem like... Sometimes you read alternate endings or see alternate endings and just like... Clerks, for example.
Yeah.
You know, the alternate ending for that is that somebody comes in and fucking kills Dante. That's not how you want to see the movie end. So sometimes you see things like that or read things like that and like, that seems out of nowhere. Like, why the fuck? But I can actually see that happening. That's actually kind of clever.
I understand it, but I think I don't like it. And I think I wouldn't like it because I don't, if the movie's about redemption, then it's not about redemption anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It kind of squashes that idea and that whole like.
Well, the circle continues. I mean, how does this guy who killed Sidney get his comeuppance?
That's the thing. It's a way darker story then. Yeah. You know, and not saying that there isn't darkness in this one, but as a character study, there's like a really clean symmetry to this story that I like. I think that would just make it darker. I mean, maybe not worse, just a darker story, I guess.
What do you think of the the original shooting script, Chad?
Don't like it.
Yeah.
No, I don't buy it. It just works. It works how it is, and I don't need like the end of Sidney. I like he's back at the diner, pulls the sleeve down. It's a perfect ending for me. Enjoy it.
Is he way more sad at the end of the movie than he is at the beginning of the movie? Like, is he in a better place emotionally, maybe?
I mean, knowing that he helped out the movie,
up until the movie starts, like, he's been carrying this burden for so long.
That
he obviously feels emotionally about it because he seeks him out.
I feel like knowing that he helped him, I don't know. For me, if I helped somebody that I fucking shot their father in the face, I'd feel a little bit better about myself, I guess. I mean, how good can you feel? You fucking kill another guy. I don't know. I don't know. Those people's brains work a little different than mine. I don't know.
That's fair. All right, gentlemen. That is 1997's Heart 8. Paul Thomas Anderson's debut. Final reviews. I'll go first. How about that? Again, I'd never seen it. Obviously, I'd always known about it. Big PTA fan since Boogie Nights. There Will Be Blood's my second favorite movie of all time. Oh, Jesus. I like the refreshness of the pared down cast and story.
Mm-hmm.
It's very refreshing to have so many different movies with such an amazing cast. And There Will Be Blood's, you know, it's not like it's a huge cast or anything. But It was nice to just have a pretty straightforward story that you could only focus on, you know, a couple of different characters. And even with the whole guessing game of like, why is this guy doing this for this fucking young dude? You know, it pays off in the end. Yeah. And you buy it. And I think that's all because of Philip Baker Hall. Like you said, Chad, it's probably one of the, or Jack. Maybe you both said it. It's probably, well, no, Chad, he said fucking Bookman. Fucking Seinfeld was his best role, you fucking dick.
Come on.
It is great. That was a great episode.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
How fun. This is Philip Baker Hall's movie, obviously. Obviously, PTA has a lot of love and respect for Hall and gives him a platform to just kind of do what he does best. And it's fantastic. It's the strongest of eights.
Would you say it's a hard?
God, how did you miss that? Good God.
Maybe I'm trying to bypass it. Mommy, I'm trying to fucking bypass it.
All right.
It's not the fucking height of clever witticisms. I give this a hard 8 because of the movie.
Bingo! How fun!
Yeah, it's the strongest of 8s. And again, with the, I think the head of the class of the 90s, Tarantino and both of the Andersons, they all made solid debuts. And it's fantastic. It's finally, it's great to finally check this off the list. Chad, what do you got? Final review.
I give it a hard 8. Oh, no. yeah, this. No, man, this movie made me like go through my fucking movie collection, Braxy over here, and find my PTA movies, man, because it just like, yeah, he is one of my favorites. He's been, I mean, Tarantino, of course, is right there, but I go back and forth between the two of them as my favorite, and Scorsese, they just juggled the three of them, but I'm going to watch Boogie Nights really soon after this and just go through the filmography again, because I just fucking love this guy, man. He has a way with me. He has his way with me. What? Oh, no, curse. no, man. Philip Baker Hall, just amazing. I feel like this is one of those directorial debuts that it doesn't feel very, you know, first movie. You can see the tracking shots, the beginning of P.T. Anderson in this movie. But I think it stands on its own as like a really good just character study of this guy, Sydney. And I fucking had a really good time with it. This is going to be a strong 8 for me as well. I didn't say hard. Okay.
Oh boy. No. All right. All right. What are we going to give this here? What are we going to give this?
Huge movie.
No. So you mentioned Res Dog, you know, Tarantino and Anderson and Res Dogs and Bottle Rocket are their debut movies. Res Dogs was a big movie for me when I was younger, but, you know, Pete and I did a commentary for it not too long ago. And while I still appreciate that movie,
you guys talk so much fucking shit about that movie.
Yeah. My love of that movie is definitely Wayne. Like, it's just, he's moved on from that for me. Still a good movie, but it's just not really, doesn't really occupy like a great space in my fandom anymore. Bottle Rocket, I have to revisit, but I remember being a little underwhelmed by that when I saw it. I've seen it a couple of times. I don't know, something about it, just it's not quite up to snuff with his other films for me. Mm-hmm. But of those three, man, right now I'm going to say I think Hard 8's the best of those. In terms of just like what it delivers, how it holds up as a story, and how it looks, like the acting, it feels more fully formed than those movies do to me. We're going to sweep it up. I mean, it gets an 8, definitely gets an 8 from me. You got to watch this. I think anybody who's listening to this, you know, who's a fan of the site, this is up your alley. You should definitely check this out.
Absolutely.
It's also available on Amazon Prime as we are releasing this. So definitely at least watch it for the next few weeks or so.
Fucking A.
Yeah. I think this is like a borderline great movie, honestly. Like I'm so impressed by it.
Borderline great movie. It's a weird comment. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what's the delineation there? Like, what's the difference between like this being just a good movie and its potential for being a great movie? Is it just because it's just a debut movie from the guy?
No, I mean, I think if Gwyneth Paltrow was a little bit stronger of a performance, I think maybe if John C. Reilly's a little more polished, you know, Sammy J's fine, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman's fine. I don't know. It's also a very small story. Like this story and these characters are very, like this whole world is very insular, you know, like you never really feel like characters are escaping this world. It's a lot of like dimly lit rooms. It's a lot of interiors or close-up shots, you know, shots at night inside of a car. Like everything's very small and sort of focused and yeah, I don't know. There's, I can't say that it's better than other PTA movies.
I guess is the
distinction I would make. Like,
gotcha.
There Will Be Blood's a great movie. Boogie Nights is a great movie. You know, some of his other films are on par with this. Maybe one of them I feel is a little bit not as good as this movie. You know. So
Phantom
it's somewhere
Thread is criminally underrated.
I agree. So it's you can tell all the pieces are there though. Like, it's technically sound, performance is good. It kind of needs those additional things to push it over the edge. You know, like, as a central character that's driving all of these other like ancillary interesting characters on their own. You know, Dirk Diggler's kind of a better conduit to get better situations than Sidney is, right? Mm-hmm. So you could just see Anderson evolving his style and making those great movies after this one. Whereas this is like, okay, the training wheels are still kind of on, but you know, we're getting things moving, I guess is what I'm saying. So,
you know, one thing I'm just realizing we didn't mention is how good fucking Sam Jackson is in this. I mean, he doesn't have a lot to do. I mean, he's basically there as like, you know, the muscle, the bad guy eventually. But in the like small pockets that he's in, the dude is, and I just realized that I didn't play the third clip, which is a Sam Jackson clip as Jimmy.
You want to play it now?
Yeah, let's play it now just because, and I'll provide some context. This is where Jimmy tells Sidney that he knows about Atlantic City and the stories from Atlantic City and how he shot John's father. But it's this Sam Jackson in the car or like while they're talking when he turns from like, you know, smiling, good-natured Sam Jackson to like turning off all the lights in Jackie Brown as Pam Grier walks from room to room and like how scary that fucking dude is. It just reminded me of Ordell, this scene. Here we go.
Look, this motel thing's got nothing to do with nothing anymore. I mean, shit, thankfully that's done. That's over. I didn't mention it in my note, but you should be aware that I know some things about Atlantic City. I mean, I'm from back east originally. You didn't know that, but I know some things about Atlantic City.
Where you going? Sidney, Sid. Hey, I said something to you. Don't walk away from me. I said I heard the story about Atlantic City.
What? Tough guy, huh? You can tell me? You can tell me what?
I haven't told John, but I know about Atlantic City. You shot his father in the face.
See, that's what I mean about Sidney having seen that type of character multiple times throughout his life. Because he immediately sees what's up, laughs, gets out of the car, is just like, fuck this guy. Like, you want to play this out? Let's play this out, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I mean, he's very good. I mean, we probably kind of glossed over him because, he's that good. Like he's so solid.
What's the Philip Baker Hall show?
Yeah, it's just tough to stray from that, really, you know? But, yeah, he's great. I mean, you know, what is this? This is 96. So, yeah, mm-hmm. This is post Pulp Fiction. This is right around Jackie Brown time. Mm-hmm. It's definitely didn't ignore him out of, you know, for any specific reason.
No, absolutely.
He's so fucking squeaky in this movie. He's always got the tight leather gloves. He's like pulling off and the leather jacket. Like every scene, he's just like, wah, wah, wah. I'm just like, oh, fucking announcing yourself, Samuel. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's fucking great. He's fantastic as always. I mean, what else is there to say about Samuel Jackson?
Yeah, exactly. Had to give him his due. All right. Jack, what's coming up with our next series for movie homework?
Yeah, so you have informed us that you're going to take a little break from the next series. So you're going to be hanging out elsewhere for a little while. So we decided to do was we reached out to a few people, and turns out the hosts of Binge Media are busy around this time of year. Who'd have thunk it, you know? So what we decided to do is Chad and I are going to stay on, and we got in touch with Warren from Jersey. And he is going to join us for a series of action films. So we're going to be doing underrated action films, and we've got a few ideas of what direction we're going in. I'm still deciding. I'm going to pick first, so I'm still deciding what the movie's going to be. So I don't have that announcement here. We'll post that on the article, or probably on Facebook at some point. But yeah, so underrated action movies, and you can expect us with Warren in a couple of weeks. So tune in.
Nice.
Can't wait.
All right, gentlemen, anything else?
Nada.
No? All right. All right, thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Movie Homework and for this series of directorial debuts. Had a lot of fun. Had some good watches. Checked a lot off our lists. And for more content like this, go to bingemedia.net. Search Binge Media on any podcast platform, including Spotify, Stitcher, all that good stuff. Rate and review us. That'd be awesome. And Patreon, patreon.com/bingemedia. Let's see. What else? I think that's it. All right, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Peace.
See you. Damn it, this is hard.
What's up, pal?
You've been listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network at bingemedia.net. Support the show by donating on Patreon at patreon.com/bingemedia. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Buy some merch at bingemedia.net/shop. Subscribe to our newsletter at bingemedia.net/newsletter. And don't forget,
I didn't stop giving hand jobs because I wasn't good at it. I stopped giving hand jobs because I was the best at it.
Fuck off.
I'm doing the Dolby Atmos.